Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com. I say that every week, but it is all new every week. We keep improving it. And this is a place where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERE here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, now in Boston, Massachusetts, and even Phoenix, Arizona. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs, and that is absolutely guaranteed. And ask about our many other exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's market where listings are in short supply and move quickly, you'll want to be as competitive as possible when you do find the house you want. And that's only through a pre-purchase commitment, unless you've got a pile of cash lying around, which is always a good thing. I encourage you to call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 for personalized, customized, what we call knock your socks off service. And check out that low rate and closing cost guarantee. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, again, out to even into Boston, Massachusetts, and Phoenix, Arizona. All you have to do is dial 716-631-4800, enter the street number of the house you want to know about. That's the local number. We have a local number in each market. And when you dial that number, you're going to hear a brief ad on that house, description of that house. And it doesn't matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. You'll select the one you want. You'll hear that brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. There's no need to call any other real estate number, real phone number, anywhere on earth, but 631-4800. This is a very active time in the market right now, and I encourage you to think about what your current status is of the house you own and what you might want to be in, because it's an opportunity, for example, to capitalize on the demand that exists in our marketplace today, and that's one of the things we're going to be talking about today with my guest, but also an opportunity to really understand where you are in terms of housing and where you and how you live right now. And it should be something that you constantly assess. I think people generally stay in Western New York in particular in the homes way too long, and then they look around and they say, this place needs a lot of work and it's too big for us or it's too small for us or whatever the case might be. But the point is that you have an opportunity if you deal with a qualified professional to assess your needs on a regular basis, also determine the value of your home so that you know what you're working with in the market, and think about that pre-purchase commitment as well. We have a very special show for you today, but before I get to our guest, we are the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and even the Rochester Americans. We are live, and you can reach us here in the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, or *930 if you're mobile. You can even text us here if I can remember what the text thing is. 30930 is the text number, so you can even text us if you want to say something nasty. So here in the studio with me today, I have a very special guest, a gentleman who's been with me several times before, and that's Kevin Gaughan. Mr. Gaughan is an attorney, and he's also widely known in our community for, I think, a great many things, but one in particular we're going to be talking about today, and I'll let him introduce that. But good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Peter. It's great to be here with you.
It's good to have you back. And before we get any further, I want to extend my condolences to you and family about your brother, Vince. That's a sad loss.
Peter, that's very kind. I know you are a friend of Vincent and a good friend. And we all know when we lose a family member, it's a challenge. But we're strengthened by family and by the knowledge and belief that he's with our parents in heaven. But we miss Vincent terribly.
He's a fine gentleman, a great guy, a lot of fun. Always a lot of fun. So
he appreciates that, Peter.
Well, I appreciated him. Anyway, back to our community. You've had several, I wouldn't call them causes, but really movements that you've been involved with here in our community, Kevin.
Missions.
That's even better. Going back in time to the 90s when there was the effort to consolidate governments, and that kind of evolved, and then into a whole series of discussions, and there didn't seem to be at that time, if I can take you back in that time, a lot of people talking about it, but there didn't seem to be a lot of clear paths. Then when the kind of the movement kind of dissipated a little bit, you took up the mantle of shrinking town boards, school boards, where in many cases there were paid people that were perhaps duplicative. And that was an effort to bring the cost of government down. Go back in time and just how did that work? What would be your assessment today after all the effort you put into that?
That's an interesting question, Peter. We, as you know, or perhaps recall, our regionalism movement, the idea that our multiple levels of government in upstate New York, which, by the way, has the highest concentration of government and politicians, according to a study that we conducted now, perhaps 11 years ago, that the idea that they should collaborate and cooperate more in order to reduce costs. And as you say, we commenced that movement in the mid-1990s, and by about 2003 or 4, it had dissipated a little bit. And but I'd continued to do some research and reading as I was taught in school, and I came across a very little known law in the state of New York that permits citizens, as Americans, to exercise their fundamental right, the right of petition, which is just to circulate a piece of paper and get signatures and compel votes, not on individuals in offices, but rather on ideas. And the idea was, what if we returned our town boards and village boards, and as you say, county legislatures and school boards, to their original size? Because over the years, like everything, they grew, except our population. And that turned out to be sort of an interesting and dynamic way of keeping the discussion, as you say, Peter, alive, of how we as a community, as we both know, the greatest community in America, the most special, anchored by the most special city, the great sense of place, the poetry of place that we have here that can't be replicated anywhere, I believe. It's the most wonderful place to raise children and own a home, as you know. But folks were fleeing because of the high cost of running a business, owning a home, and living here by virtue of the property taxes. There's 3,186 counties in America, and of those, Erie County residents, each and every one of us, pays the fifth highest property taxes out of 3,186. And our research showed that was partially derived from this high concentration of politicians. Looking back on it, and we met with a measure of success. I think at the end of the day, we caused 17 referenda, 17 propositions throughout upstate New York for residents of different towns and villages and counties to go in and vote, and whether they wanted to continue to lose population or try to do something about it. We were successful in 14 of those, and that resulted in Erie County in reducing property taxes by just over $5 million per year. So that's $50 million in the past 10 years. Of course, it's not the largest sum, but I thought, here's looking back on it in terms of your question. I think perhaps looking back, the greatest value of the effort, and by the way, it was the effort and result of an immense amount of volunteer Western New Yorkers who believe in our community and love it and were willing to go door to door on a regular basis and help cause these opportunities. I think looking back, perhaps its greatest value and contribution was, A, it got our elected officials and public servants to perhaps stand up a little straighter, to work a little harder, to be aware that folks were paying more attention to a level of government when against the backdrop of most discussions that center on state government and federal government, we forget that the most important level of government is the one that's closest to us. Mm-hmm. And I believe it should be the most intimate one and the most effective. And again, because of the large number of politicians, it had reduced that. And I think, as well as you said, the conversation, I'd say one of the proudest moments of my life is sometimes folks would come up to me and say, gee, last night we had dinner and my wife and I and our two children were talking about this, your idea, and my wife's opposed to it. I think it's a great idea. My son Joe, he's on the fence. And those were great discussions because it had people talking about self-government, community, and how to make it better. So I think that's what it was its perhaps lasting contribution.
Well, and that in of itself is very significant, in my opinion, and I congratulate you and everybody involved in that whole effort. Lately, it seems as though there's kind of a pushback going. These towns and school boards are looking to re-expand, and I say re-expand because, as you say, they expanded before, they brought back, and now there's an effort to push onward with more people. I know you're aware of these things. Is there an effort to keep things the way that you change them, or is it just going to go the way of governments, as you described, constantly expanding?
I think you make two good points, and one is the after some 4.5 decades here in our beloved community of lying fallow and no change, and in the post-war era until now, about 10 or 15 years ago, when we began this new exciting idea of reinvestment and growth and emphasizing that which renders us unique, which comes to the project that I'm working on now. We developed a little bit. I spoke at the time, about 4 or 5 years ago, after the downtown development and waterfront development began, with a great urban expert, and he said, you know, Kev, I think you have to be very careful in Buffalo, because in some measure you're more vulnerable now than you were during those years of nothing happening, because mm-hmm. what happens is, his analogy was, he compared us to a plane rising, taking off. He said it's those first few years, the first few moments of takeoff, when you're actually most vulnerable, because people tend to believe that all the hard work is done,
right,
and that everything's going to be fine. And the truth of the matter is, I like to say we can't confuse development with growth. We've got wonderful development yet, but we've yet to see that reflect it and produce some reverse and dramatic reverse of the dramatic loss of population. We lost 274,000 people here in Western New York between 1976 and 2005. That was the most residents that any community in America lost during that period. As a matter of fact, it set a record. So what happens is
not a good one.
Yeah, not. I should say a
really bad one. That's one we don't want to be in the record.
Not a feather in our cap. That's right. And of course, yes, because of the culture of public service, government always seems to be the lead the way in the discussion of how can we expand. And so there has been some efforts under the law that I discovered. It essentially gives citizens the right to distribute these petitions and cause these votes to either reduce or downsize, mm-hmm. or the opposite, upsize. My view is, I think all that activity is healthy. I disagree with someone circulating a petition to cause a vote to upsize. Mm-hmm. I think, again, it causes conversation. And the good news is there's been 4 efforts to reverse our work, and we've turned back 3 of them. And the town of Hamburg did upsize which was disappointing, but I certainly respect. Again, the healthiest part of it is these decisions are being made by citizens and not politicians. And nothing but good can come from that. But I would say that my view is, once we restore the 274,000 folks who left our community over the past 35 years, we can have as many politicians as we want.
Sure.
And but until that time, I think, in as much as the private sector, and you know this better than anyone, and business people and small business women and men, who over the past 25, 30 years had to reduce their number of employees, had to reduce their revenue, and they had to innovate, they had to adapt to that, and they had to downsize. And the underlying or animating idea of the entire movement that I had the privilege of participating in was, government should do the same, because that's the first essential step to reversing the decline so that we could grow again.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. You touched on one topic that we've been talking about a lot on this show with my guests, and that is the issue of the momentum that we feel and consequently the vulnerability. And one of the things that I've observed, and we're going to talk about that on the show, we're going to be talking about that in the future with some of our elected officials, is the issue that they, number one, will often, and maybe with good reason, take credit for some of this stuff, the good things happening in our community. And I think the best thing that elected official can do in many cases, just get out of the way and let these things happen. And as they do, they feed on themselves. The momentum is created. People feel better, and they look around. They see cranes in the sky, which we haven't seen in a long time, and all that stuff. And you start saying, well, maybe this is a better place than I thought it was. And so I like it here now. I like it more. But that, just like you say, a plane taking off is a great analogy. It's most vulnerable as it goes up. And I went to the air show yesterday. It was an amazing thing to see.
Oh, my gosh.
Amazing thing to see. And I encourage anybody to go there. I'd never been to something like that. Spectacular. I was the guest of some of our agents who are still active duty in the military, in the Air Force there, and it was spectacular. But watching those planes take off was, and what you just said is really kind of exciting. Because that's, first of all, when the G-force is greatest on the human body, it's an amazing, amazing thing that some people were describing to me about the impact on physically on somebody. I think we're kind of in the same boat as you describe. We've got this great feeling, this exuberance, this uplifting feeling that we're going in the right direction, but there's walls out there.
Yeah.
We're not the only community in the country that's feeling good. We're not the only community that's hit on the uprise. You mentioned that we are fifth highest in property taxes of 3,186 counties. The number one fastest growing county in the United States is Maricopa County, where Phoenix, Arizona is. We have four offices there, and it's amazing. And it's like the government is irrelevant. They're just doing their thing. And letting things happen, obviously with low taxes, very, very sparse government, that's the only way to describe it, but enormous energy and enormous growth. And I think we can and should have the same thing here. But it begins, like you say, kind of government just getting out of the way. And one of the ways to do that is make it smaller and make it proportional to the population, which is what your effort was.
In all the wonderful experiences that I had, and that we all had during the course of our reform movement, was the experience of going around the country and examining other comparably sized communities and with common aspirations as ours, and learning just an immense amount. And Peter, you're absolutely right. Everything in life is a competition. From the National Hockey League to the NBA. To American cities, competing with each other, and indeed now, of course, in the global economy, with every city around the world to try to create a sustainable, functional, healthy, forward-looking community. And in the course of that, I came to learn from the really best minds of community building and the fundamental American idea, which is what's the relationship between government and a citizen. I learned that on a local level, the fundamental purpose of local government is just to create a nurturing environment, a nurturing public environment for private investment. So in some measure, there's a large element of that of sort of clearing the way and permitting human beings to do what they do best. There's no doubt about it. And if there's a common hallmark among those communities, and by the way, in the Southwest, of course, Phoenix and Arizona, they never had the history of Northeast cities like ours. When these local governments were created, and there was at the time immense amount of what was called revenue sharing, federal revenue sharing, there was a ton of public funds available, and the federal government would actually on an annual basis give out money to states and localities and cities and towns and villages and the like. But the problem is it's a long story, but it's sort of interesting. But the manner in which and the process by which we here in New York State in particular and upstate New York ended up with these multiple entities of not only counties but towns, not only towns, cities, and not only cities, villages. My sense is at the end of it, and by the way, back to your question, and perhaps in some measure the contribution that the movement made was we had 15, 20 years ago forgotten how to change here. And folks had actually come to believe that you couldn't change. And maybe that was the best contribution we made, which is we sort of reminded people that just with a piece of paper, you could change something. And that created this nice new feeling of the young people, by the way, who are living and experiencing our city of Buffalo and its growth. So they have no memory of the bad times. And that's a good thing, too. I don't think that those folks, women and men who founded this country, they certainly believed that you had to have representatives in your state capital and in Washington because it was so far away for you to represent your interests. But the idea of having hundreds of politicians in your own community representing yourself to yourself is one that somehow over time got a little out of control. And so we're still in the process of trying to address it.
We're going to have to go to a break now, but when we come back from the break, I'd like you to talk about your latest adventure, which is kind of exciting. We'll be back with more from our house cheers after these very important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, Why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate into Boston, Massachusetts, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. You'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, call 633-3700 today and ask for details about things like our pre-purchase commitment, also our program that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before but live the after and knowing exactly what you're in for. You know, oftentimes, homes, houses, real property are viewed as money pits, and they can be. This is a program that allows you to know upfront what that money pit, how deep that pit's going to be, and also be able to finance it, which is a great thing, so that everything is supported by contracts. And when you're all said and done, you can not only get the house you want, but you'll get the house that you hope it will be, and also finance the whole thing. That's through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And if you just want to pick up the phone and ask a question about anything relative to real estate, call the only customer service center for real estate in North America, the Hunt ERA Customer Service Center, at 633-9400. One of our customer service reps can answer your question right there or direct you to the appropriate professional who can, whether you're considering buying or selling, financing, insuring, or even fixing up a home. And remember, our guarantee stands, we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the strongest guarantee in real estate, called the Seller Security Plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. And you can find one of those people, those fine people, one of our many open houses this weekend, and check out all of our services through that Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. They're really a wealth of information, not just about real estate, but about the whole homeownership experience. I'm in the studio today with Kevin Gaughan. Mr. Gaughan is an attorney and also widely known in our community for his many efforts to, in many ways, improve our community through better governance and through also an action that we're going to be talking about in this segment, which has to do with this latest adventure. And I'm going to let you introduce it, but let me just tell you a little bit about what I see from it. We had Stephanie Crockett on the show not long ago, who heads the Olmsted Parks, and we've been kind of helpful or try to be helpful with regard to that whole effort. I think it's important that we take advantage of a treasure like that. And you're really focusing on one of those parks and how it can be perhaps returned to what Mr. Olmsted thought it should be and also provide a new community asset. So tell us a little about what you're up to.
I'm grateful for the opportunity to discuss it, Peter. I think it was just now about 4 years ago. First of all, as with every Western New Yorker and Buffalo resident, I love our magnificent Frederick Law Olmsted treasures, and they are national treasures, these public spaces and bucolic spaces. I've come to believe that all great achievers, people like Olmsted, what they share is a very original, animating idea. And Olmsted's was that no matter where you lived, and no matter what your economic status was, especially in a high-density urban area in America, that every human being has the right to access to nature. And in his time in the 19th century, that was a very revolutionary idea. And as you know, his principal contribution in the city of New York, Central Park, just in the post-Civil War era, was an extraordinary achievement. And it caught the attention of a Buffalo businessman, a young man not unlike you, Peter, a civic leader at the time, in the 1860s and 70s, and named Bill Dorsheimer, who lived on Delaware Avenue, and he was a great admirer of Central Park, and he had an idea, and his idea was why don't we get Frederick Law Olmsted to come to Buffalo and create a Central Park for Buffalo. It took him several years, and I must say he was very innovative in his efforts to get the attention of Olmsted. Had received a commission to design the grounds of Stanford University, and Dorsheimer figured out that he had to come through Buffalo, and to make a long story short, he finally convinced Mr. Olmsted to come. And Olmsted spent just a brief time driving around and examining our city, and he went to Mr. Dorsheimer and he said, no, absolutely not. I will not design a park for you, but I'll tell you what, I've had this idea, Olmsted said. I've always wanted to design a series of parks and connect them with parkways, and this magnificent canvas that you people call Buffalo, Olmsted called the greatest planned city in the world. And he was very admiring of the Joseph Ellicott system of radials and parkways and streets emanating from different roundabouts. And that's how we got this magnificent gift. That was now 140 years ago. And again, like all of us, I had the great gift of going to high school on the west side of Delaware Park at Nichols School. And I studied under a wonderful man named Austin Fox, who was a magnificent instructor who just a great man and a wonderful leading preservationist and ahead of his time in recognizing the value of Frank Lloyd Wright's man-made creations and this natural canvas of Olmsted and the like. And he convinced me as a young man to join a group of citizens called the Friends of Olmsted Park, which has now evolved into our magnificent conservancy. And folks should know, you know, our Olmsted, Buffalo Olmsted Parks Conservancy, like the Central Park Conservancy. It's a wonderful American idea that was born of the age of when, again, urban government started losing money and couldn't properly sustain their public amenities. And the idea is to have volunteer citizens under contract say, well, listen, we'll do this for, you know, as volunteers, and we'll maintain. And the Olmsted Conservancy here in Buffalo does a magnificent job. If you look at and think about what our parks looked like in the late 1970s and what they've done today, they are marvelous people, and they do a great, great job. I happen to be a poor runner, an aspirational runner, let's say, and I've spent most of my life running around Delaware Park. And one day, about 4 years ago, looking at the golf course, unfortunately, I'm not a golfer. When I had a life, I no longer have a life, as you know. I have a mission. But when I had one, I was a sailor. But I often wondered about the golf course in Delaware Park, and I wondered why it couldn't be a little bit better. And to make a long story short, I I've been following the Conservancy, and I knew that they were very interested in, as you mentioned, in South Park, restoring something that Mr. Olmsted designed in 1894. He had this great idea to surround the botanical gardens with what he called an arboretum. That just means a tree museum. Mm-hmm. And Olmsted himself, in the late 1890s, he selected just over 2,300 species of trees and plants and flora and shrubs, planted them himself, and designed this beautiful walkway so as you walk through it, you actually experience the history of growth on the planet. Hmm. It was an extraordinary thing. And it was sort of, shall we say, diminished by a golf course that was placed on top of it in the mid 20th century. So to make a long story short, I sort of conceived this idea with one end in mind, and that is to try to attain the long-standing goals of our conservancy, which is to restore that Olmsted Arboretum. The proper preservation term is to rehabilitate it. In my judgment, make these golf course in Delaware. Again, I don't play. Who has the time? To make it better. Mm-hmm. If there was an animating idea that I had, which it was this, and conceiving the idea, we think about public parks all wrong. We think of them just as recreation spaces when they can really be catalysts to change people's life. So my plan that I've been working on, and with a ton of wonderful people for these past 4 years, was this. As you mentioned, my wonderful brother, Vincent, he was an independent contractor for a very famous golfer named, who I understand was pretty good in his day, named Jack Nicklaus, who...
Stay still is here. Amazing.
And after he finished his golf career, he went on, he's a remarkable man, Peter, he went on to become the world's finest golf course designer. Mm-hmm. So to make a long story short, you know me, I'm a bit of a talker, and I talked my way. The first mistake Jack Nicklaus made was letting me into his office down in Palm Beach, and I talked my way in there, and he said he would give me 3 minutes, but I did something. I prepared. I read his memoir. I learned about his father, Charles. I learned about what was his animating idea, and I said to him, and I may have even shook my finger with him, and I said, Mr. Nicklaus, your animating idea is that athletics and competition is a way of building character. And I told him about how Frederick Law Olmsted's idea was that you had to have access to nature. And I said, what if we combine you, the world's finest golf course designer, with the world's finest landscape architect, and in the city of Buffalo, New York, not in some posh suburb, but right in an inner city next to some of the most impoverished census tracts in America on the Buffalo-Lackawanna border? What if we ask you to come here to Buffalo? By the way, we don't have any money, Mr. Nicklaus. And would you kindly consider redesigning our Delaware Park course, making it a little bit smaller so that we can restore more of Olmsted's original meadow, and then on a brown field on a former industrial site next to South Park, would you design a second golf course so we can remove the golf course in South Park, and restore Olmsted's Arboretum? And then the centerpiece for me, this is a bit of a, I must say his eyes were glazing over at this point. The centerpiece for me, I said to Mr. Nicholas, I think that there should be an education component to this. I'm not interested in you building recreation spaces. My idea is if we get to restore the Arboretum and you build a beautiful Jack Nicklaus course next to it, let's build an education center that will provide inner-city youth with vocational training, and we'll use your lands as classrooms to teach kids and inner-city youth and land conservation, water conservation, course maintenance, dendrology, agronomy. At that point, I remember he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, Kevin, call me Jack. And I knew I got him. And sure enough, this wonderful man who's filled with empathy, by the way, he's got great business skills, very hard-nosed. But when I told him that our city is the fourth or fifth most impoverished city in America and that more than 50% of our minority kids can't read, he said, oh, that can't be. And I said, yes, it is. He said, I'll do it.
Really?
So that's
how a great story.
That's awfully.
That's tremendous.
I was very lucky. We ended up spending about 7 or 8 hours. He took me to lunch that day, and and since then, virtually every other weekend, I go down and we work to Florida and we work on this. And he's vastly improved my original idea. He and his wife, who by the way also, they're wonderfully civic people. He's from Columbus, Ohio.
Right.
He has more in common with Buffalo than he does with Palm Beach. I'll tell you, he's a good man. And now, of course, for an undertaking of this size and aspiration that requires money. And from the very beginning, my idea is that we raise this money privately. There'd be no government funds. You know, I don't believe in taxes, especially mm-hmm. for something like this. And we have to do this in a way so that the new amenities that are created are going to be, here's what's important. Western New Yorkers, Buffalo citizens are going to be able to play these new amenities, these new golf courses for the same price they pay today. These are going to be public spaces. Aimed at improving the life and enriching the life of inner city Buffalo residents.
Hold that thought. We want to come back to it because there's a lot more I want to hear about, and I hope our guests, our listeners do as well. We'll be back with more from our Austeers after these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment and low-rate and closing cost guarantee. You can hear about both by simply calling 633-3700 and speaking with one of our mortgage consultants today. We're going to get right back into our show today because it's a very important one, in my opinion, in terms of some of the innovative things going on, one of the more innovative things going on here in Western New York and what it may mean for our community. And in the studio with me today is Kevin Gaughan, an attorney and also somebody who's taken on a bunch of stuff on his own. And this is his latest project. And I had to cut you off in your story a little bit, but before we get to that, let's take a call here if we can, Kevin. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Kevin. Kevin, sorry for your loss.
Thank you, sir.
By the way, did you talk to Jack Nicklaus about his grandson, Nick O'Leary, who plays for the Buffalo Bills?
You know, when I first met with Jack, it was before young Nick O'Leary, as you say, his wonderful grandson, came on board. But since then, it's another relationship that the wonderful Nicklaus family has with our community. He's a fine young man. I understand he's a very talented football player, and my offer to the Bills is I'm always available and ready to join Nick O'Leary and pitch in whatever I can do.
Yeah, wide receiver, Kevin, I don't know.
lineman, maybe?
I think if we need center. Maybe you could put us there. Anyway, what you have a question or comment, John?
Yeah, I was still going to comment on smaller government. In Monroe County, which is the county where Rochester is, we have 29 county legislators. And I have to say, I think it works pretty well. I think the focus should be not on decreasing the size of a representation. I think the real problem, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, is the public employee unions that permeate this state. And that's where the real problem is. I know, Kevin, when you were on your mission going back a number of years, there was a study done in the consolidation of Erie County and the city of Buffalo, I think. And the conclusion was that if that was done, it would only save 3% of the budget. And I think the focus should be on public employee unions and reducing the size of these and the strength of these. What are your thoughts there?
Well, first of all, let me comment. When was the last time anybody saw a 3% reduction in government? Respond to John there.
John, I'm grateful for your thoughts. And there's a in the environmental movement in America today, the efforts to try to find ways to have our country leave the carbon-based, difficult energy system in which we live. They like to say, in attempting to accomplish that, nothing's going to work, but everything might. In other words, we have to think about every other possible alternative. And my sense is that I hear your thoughts, but I think you're right. Of course, the union and public employees, county legislature size, town government size, everything has to be examined and rethought and hopefully reformed. What I learned was, of course, over the years, there's been decades of discussion about reducing the number of public employees in a community. By the way, now most public employees we have to understand they're full-time workers, full-time employees. Many of them are professional, highly trained, and they work hard, and they deserve their compensation and benefits. You have to bear in mind that the politicians, let's say you're 29 county legislator members in Monroe County. The average size of a county legislature in America is 8 members. Their counties in California, San Diego County, for instance, they have 2.6 million residents in that county. They have 5 county legislators. Atlanta, I think it's Peachtree County, and again, 3 and 4 times the size of Monroe County, they have 7 county legislators. So the idea is that by reducing the number of excessive legislators, let's say in Monroe, you're actually not reducing representation. You're actually creating more room, if you will, more space, more air for citizen participation and voice. And so that's sort of the underlying idea. But the bottom line is, it seems, it's not just Erie County here, and as you know, in Monroe County, upstate New York, for a broad range of reasons, happened to be the one darn community in America that has this high concentration of governments and politicians. And it was the community that did not participate in any way, shape, or form with the 7 economic resurgences that swept the nation from 1990 until about 2005, driven principally by the internet age and all the new technology and magnificent opportunity that created. And so now, while we are somewhat beginning to join the new age, we still have to, if we're going to, whether it be in Monroe County, which has also lost substantial amounts of folks over the years, and think about it, every time a county loses folks, as Peter just mentioned, government tends to grow every year. There's always a growth in expenses and the like. And if your number of customers, if you will, is decreasing, that means every year you're taking more money from fewer people, and that's a prescription for disaster.
I want to take you back to the good topic here. that's an important topic, and we could talk all day about that, or you could certainly enlighten the rest of us. But go back to your golf course concept and Jack Nicklaus here for a second. What is the vision now? You said it evolved with Jack. What is it now? And then how far away are we from realizing this thing as it is now envisioned? And also, what's needed between here and there? Besides obviously money, but you were just about to talk about that. But go ahead.
Thanks, Peter. The Well, the fundamental idea remains the same, again, which is I'd like to call my project a restoration, recreation, and education project. The restoration is returning our Olmsted, a lot of our Olmsted lands to their original design and returning that. When I got the idea, one of the first things I did, again, and it goes back to Austin Fox and the education with which I was gifted. I went up to Brookline, Massachusetts, which is where the National Archives, Frederick Law Olmsted Archives, are located. And I found all of his original drawings and notes for all of our park system, for South Park, for Delaware Park. It was fascinating. Wow. And that was one of the ways I was able to, frankly, I'll tell you the truth. The truth of the matter is, nice Jack Nicklaus, he said no to me several times. But he wasn't really focusing and he wasn't really hearing what I was saying. And what I was trying to say was, look, if you'll come and do this in Delaware Park, for instance, we'll provide you with the original ideas of Olmsted. So in your design, when they put the Delaware Park course in, they just plopped it in on right. top of it. And there was no real thought. No one really knows who designed the darn thing. But I said to Jack, I said, if you do it, we'll give you the designs and you could actually sort of, you'll be the only golf course designer in the world who could say you collaborated with Frederick Law Olmsted. Right. And and that appealed to him. In terms of where we are, we've made substantial progress. We have a letter of initial support from me. We have to gain the consent and assent of two bodies. One, of course, our Olmsted Conservancy, because they are the stewards on behalf of citizens. And secondly, you also have to remember, though, these lands are public lands. They're owned by the citizens of Buffalo. They're owned by the city of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. But I don't like to say government as a result of my experience, they're owned by citizens. Mm-hmm. And so our view is we've begun to raise our funds. We're working and collaborating and continue to discuss matters with the Conservancy. The Conservancy has other interests and the like. They're principally a maintenance body. And as I said, they do a magnificent job. It's a bit of a process to satisfy the Conservancy's understandable requests for substance. And evidence of potential success. But on the other hand, I got lucky. I was able to convince two wonderful people, Jack Nicklaus and a guy named John Thornton, who's my fundraising partner, who has agreed to go out and find the funds to actually make this small vision of mine a reality. And but time is ticking a little bit. Speaking for myself, we're all getting older. Who knows how much time we have left on God's earth. My sense is this. We've got a little bit of investment and turnaround in this community. It's centered on the waterfront in downtown. My proposed project will build on that energy and investment. We'll take it up into North Buffalo and into South Buffalo. And by the way, that area of South Buffalo and Lackawanna, both of my parents were originally from there. And all of us who love that community are in anguish and despair over its present state. And to have mm-hmm. a Jack Nicklaus designed golf course, by the way, it's called the Jack Nicklaus Signature. He's going to come and do it himself. When he does that, it tends to, and you'll be interested in this, he's permitted me to examine his books and look at what he does. It, on average, the presence of a Jack Nicklaus designed golf course raises property taxes and the value of homes nearby by 37%. It would be a great catalyst toward reviving that community. And again, I think meeting our generational duty, it's been many years now since any substantial funds have been invested into our Olmsted parks, and they're beginning to reflect that a little bit, and this project will do that, and so I'm hopeful. Well, our next step now is we're going to plan three public forums, one on the west side of Delaware Park, one on the east side, and one in South Buffalo, to let citizens come in, take a look at what I'm proposing, and I know what they're going to do. They're going to improve it. They're going to shape it, and then at the end of the day, we'll have community consensus over what we might be able to do.
When is the first one?
We're going to try to do it in late July. First one in late July. On the east side of Buffalo. You have to remember when I got the idea. One of the first things I did real quick was I spent a summer interviewing folks who play the Delaware Park course. I interviewed 144 people, and here's what I found. That course, again, speaking as a non-golfer and an Olmsted lover, has become a cherished space for inner-city residents, mostly people of color, who have neither the resources or access to private golf facilities. It's become a very Olmstedian idea. Mm-hmm. By the way, I interviewed them. It was about 68% African-American, 5% Burmese, Vietnamese, Asian Americans who are coming to our city of Buffalo, helping us grow, and they love it. And my view is Wouldn't it be magnificent to provide them with a Jack Nicklaus design equal to virtually, if not superior, to any other private course, and that be available to play for them for $10.50? I think that's a great, great thing. And I think that's what public spaces should be utilized in that way. So I'm very proud of it. We have much work remains, but I must say it's the result of a ton of work by all kinds of folks who have pitched in these past 3 or 4 years, and we're getting close. The headline was last week we were able to purchase the land that's necessary next to South Park, a former brownfield and industrial site, the site of the Nicklaus course, and we finally we entered into agreement. We hope to close within the next 2 weeks, and wow. So we secured the land, which is always pivotal to undertakings like this.
We don't have much time left here, Kevin, and I want to just see if there's any last things that our listeners could do to engage with this program, and then besides come to the forums, and what else you might want to say quickly.
That's awfully kind. In the next several days, we're going to make a couple of announcements, including launching our website so folks can come on the website. It's NicklausHolmsteadBuffalo.org.
We do have to close. Thank you very much, Kevin Gaughan. Attorney and many other things. Thank you for being with us today. I'd like to thank our listeners for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time. Remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York is hunt country.